for the first and last time this year, we're recording the Rebel Room off of victories for each of UNLV Athletics' two biggest programs. Basketball team wins two games last week, walloping Pacific, decent Pacific team, and then holding on to beat a Southern Utah team that I actually heard a lot of people say they might have problems with. But that was just an appetizer for Saturday night when UNLV wins the Fremont Cannon back. It is red again, as Mike Gramala saw yesterday. UNLV beats UNR 34-29. They had the celebration yesterday. Again, this is the Rebel Room. I'm Case Kiefer, along with the aforementioned Mike Gramala and Ray Brewer today. Mike, what was the mood over at UNLV's campus yesterday? I got to think it was as positive as we're going to be about all these wins UNLV's racking up.
Yeah, it was a fun atmosphere, and it's funny, the players, you know, they get the Fremont Cannon at their practice facility, and then they roll it across campus to the student union where they actually, everyone gathers, and they paint it, and it's a fun thing. And as the players were walking up and they saw the crowd gathered, I heard some of them talking, and they were commenting, and they were surprised by how many people showed up. Like, there were probably a couple hundred people waiting and wanting to take part in the painting ceremony, so... Yeah, it was a pretty good turnout. The players were excited to do it. Don't you think that could be a cool, like, I feel like that's a very cool, like, tradition. Like, you don't just win the trophy, but then you take the trophy on campus and, like, get to actively do something with it where your students can participate. I think that would be very cool if, like, the fan base was more into it and they could, you know, could get a ton of people. I feel like it would be a very big deal.
Yeah, so what would the protocol, though, be for next year? Say they win, they defend their cannon redness. Do they repaint it red, or do they just roll it back in?
I think they just leave it, but you could, I mean, you could always touch it up or repaint it or give it, like, a different paint, because you could always give it a unique paint job, you know, because, you know, you don't just paint it, like, solid blue, like Nevada had it done, where, you know, with their logo on one side and their slogan on the other side, and, you know, it's not just a solid paint job. So you can switch it up a little bit. You know how UNLV likes to switch up the helmet designs and the field design, so maybe you do a little cannon design, if you win it. I mean, first you have to defend it. Then you can worry about the paint jobs.
And then you got to worry about if there's an artist on the roster, if you're going to switch things up. I mean, I just know if I was on the team, I wouldn't be able to do anything other than throw a layer of red on there, let alone get a logo or something.
Yeah, that's basically what Armani Rogers said. He said he just attacked it and tried to get as much blue off as he could.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if Armani Rogers could do that, because it looked like he could do everything else in the game on Saturday. Five touchdowns. He was great on the ground, great through the air. As big as this win was for UNLV, I feel like it was just as big for Armani Rogers personally. I mean, when he went down with his injury, I don't care what hindsight people want to say, there were a lot of people saying, like, this isn't going to hurt UNLV. Gillum's just as good. Armani can't throw the ball. And I feel like he really silenced some critics with this win over the Wolfpack, and showing that, you know, there can be a dynamic offense built around him, and maybe that's something you can build on going into next year.
I mean, if Armani Rogers plays like that on a consistent basis, then UNLV has no problems going forward. Then they're, you know, exactly where they want to be. They're a bowl team, you know, to start the year. They're a bowl team to finish the year. The question is, you know, that was the best game of his career. How many times can he play like that? But it does give them something to build off of, you know, going into the offseason. I know the coaching staff was excited about the way he played. Armani was very happy with, you know, the result. And he very much looked like someone who was just happy to be soaking it in, you know, after the game, at the painting ceremony, at all that stuff. So, I mean, it was in the, I think the best part, the most encouraging part was, you know, it was only 46 yards rushing. You know, he didn't run the ball all day long, you know, like he did at Arkansas State, where it's just take the snap, look for a hole, and plow forward. He did it throwing the ball. He's 13 of 20, threw three touchdown passes, no interceptions, didn't even really come close to throwing an interception that I can remember. So very good with the ball, productive with the arm, and then he ran when he had to. You know, when it was when you're down on the goal line and it's how do we get this ball in? Oh, wait, we have a 6'5", 230-pound quarterback who can run over anyone, and then he got two touchdowns that way, including the game winner. So I think if you're looking for the Armani Rogers formula going forward, that would be pretty close to what you want to see from him on an every week basis.
Just as big of an upset as UNLV is a 14-point underdog over Reno. Brewer, this is what you've been guaranteeing for three straight years. It finally happens and you're silent over there. What are you, don't want to jinx it? You're already thinking about next year? I thought you'd come in here celebrating, beating your chest, I don't know, maybe painting the walls red.
I mean, this is what 3 days after now.
What was your feeling when it was 23-0?
Well, here's the deal. So I was covering a prep game, and I wasn't tuned into the radio on the way home. And when I got home, it was already 23-0, and I said to myself, okay, well, they got to get this closer or Sanchez is going to be in trouble for his job. Then I started writing, and then it was by the time I got done, it was around halftime, and we had a game now. And then I watched the whole second half in excitement.
That was pretty much my foremost thought when it got to 23-0 in the first quarter was, this is going to be very, very bad for Tony Sanchez if this game ends up 48-0 or something to that effect. It was very important for UNLV to get on the board and just do something early to make it a game again. I didn't expect them to come all the way back, but just to show some life, which, I mean, the first quarter could not have gotten worse.
Yeah, I don't think – I had the exact same feelings. It's crazy to think how much can change in one game, but I feel like in that span of 2 hours, like when they were down 23-0 – and it wasn't like they looked so bad in that 23-0.
It wasn't a fluke.
It was a fluky 23-0. I really felt like Tony Sanchez was probably a slight underdog to even keep his job if it stays at that rate. Then obviously it totally flips if they win. But I'm really glad both of you two brought that up because I wrote about Tony Sanchez after the game and I got a couple pieces of feedback of people saying this is ridiculous. He was never going anywhere and nothing was going to happen. I got to think when they were down 23-0 and it looked like they could lose by 40 again or something like they did to New Mexico, I just don't see how Tony Sanchez would have been retained in that scenario. So I think it was a real thing when they went down like that, that you had to question, like, is this a tipping point for the whole program?
Not just that he was safe, but how at 23-0, how could those people who are arguing with you, how could they have felt like so sure that he was safe and that he was coming back? Like, how could you even have that opinion, you know, when there's talk swirling about his job and then it's 23-0 to your biggest rival in the last game of the season? How can you be so sure that, oh, don't worry about it, he's coming back no matter what? I don't know. They must be very, very assured and very confident in Tony Sanchez and his status.
Yeah, I think that this was a great step in the right direction, right? You beat your rival. It's the only game that matters, in my opinion. And now you've got some momentum going into the off season. But the truth of the matter is that if you want to flip the book already the off season, obviously you're going to get Rodgers healthy. You lose Lexington Thomas, your tailback. You probably don't have anybody near as good as him ready to step in, even though I love Charles Williams. And the schedule gets extremely more difficult next year. We looked at it yesterday in the newsroom, at Vandy, at Northwestern, Boise here, San Diego State, at Reno. And you got to ask yourself, well, what does Tony have to do next year to remain the UNLV coach? Does he have to go to a bowl? Yes. Does he have to have a winning record? Well, that goes hand in hand. Does he have to beat Reno again? Is going to a bowl not enough? Does he have to go to a bowl and win it? Does he have to go 7-5? You know, what does Tony have to do to keep going? Because eventually you're going to hit the crossroads, right? You're going to either have to A, extend him, or B, get a new coach. Because now he's got, what, 2 years left on his deal? And
yeah, I mean, at some point it's going to – you've got to make a decision on, even if you decide to keep him, I think that's an interesting point. Even if you keep him beyond this season, are you just giving him one more year to prove himself, and then if they fall short next year, he's automatically gone? Or what does he have to do next year to, if he has a quote-unquote successful season next year, do you just let him go another year on his contract, or do you extend him? That is going to be interesting to see. I do think he's back next year for sure. I think most people, if the bar for UNLV this season was bowl game, then I don't think it can be bowl game next year, even though you didn't reach it. Like, the goal still has to be higher than that, like something like 7-5. You've got to have a good season, 7-5, go to a bowl game, show some progress, win some games against tough opponents. I think that would go a long way. Just because you backslid this year doesn't allow you to change the bar for your 2019 season, what that would have been. I think your expectations have to be the same as they were as part of your long-term plan. So winning record, bowl game, significant improvement from Armani Rodgers. Like, that's a for a coaching staff, developing a potential star quarterback is a big part of your job description. You've got to get him better on a yearly basis. So he's got to take a big step forward, which I'm not sure he did from his freshman to his sophomore year. That UNR game aside, I'm not sure he took a huge step from freshman to sophomore year. I want to see him take a big step consistently as a junior. That's a big thing. I want to see UNLV beat the teams that they should beat. They can't get upset. They can't get blown out as often as they did this year. They've got to be more competitive across the board. They've got to have a winning record. I want to see them in a bowl game. Tony Sanchez does all of that. I think he doesn't just buy himself one more year after that. I think he probably gives himself some more rope for to take a more long-term view a couple years into the future.
Yeah, the overarching point, I think progress, like you said, and in all those areas you said, and bowl game, I think those are two musts for next year. It's going to be interesting. Before we move on to basketball, I guess we've talked a bunch about, you know, big picture, what it's going to need to do to be a success, but there's just – you know, if we take a step back from the euphoria of beating your biggest rival, there were a lot of things that went wrong this year, even a lot of things that went wrong in the first quarter. What kind of more smaller details, what needs to get better to make sure that UNLV does not get blown out like they did this year, next year? What do they need to improve, you know, those areas from that perspective?
Absolutely. The number one priority far and away, defense has to get faster. They've got to get quicker and more athletic on that side of the ball. They do not have athletes there. Anytime an opposing offense is able to get them in one-on-one situations or open space situations where it's one defensive back on a receiver or one linebacker on a running back or one safety on a receiver or one safety on a tight end, anytime they have a situation where they're in space and athleticism counts, they just get beat. They get beat badly. They allow the pass to be caught. They allow the tackle to be broken. They allow a big gain, or they commit pass interference. They just are not athletic enough to keep up with opposing offenses. They've got to get quicker, faster on that side of the ball at pretty much every position. And Tony Sanchez mentioned that a few weeks ago. After they lost to San Jose State, in his post-game interview, he got very candid about what needs to change. And he said, defensively, you know, we've got a full recruiting class available for scholarships, you know, 20 scholarships. And we have to commit most of those, if not all of them, to the defensive side of the ball and just bring in as many guys as you can and hope that some of them hit and some of them turn into good players, because right now they are at such a deficit on that side of the ball. You've probably got, on the entire defensive side, you've probably got three or four players that are Mountain West competitive, you know, that are competitive at a Mountain West talent level. And that is not enough. I mean, San Jose State's offensive athletes are better than your defensive athletes. And that is not a way to for consistent success. They've got to get better on the defense side of the ball. I expect them to spend most, if not all, of their scholarships there in the offseason. And even though those guys are going to be freshmen and some junior college transfers, they need instant impact guys. And there is playing time available on that side of the ball. If you come in and you are fast or you come in and you are quick, you will play because you will go straight to the top of the depth chart. So that, for me, that's what I want to see. Who do they recruit defensively to come in and plug these holes? Would they have a lot of them?
All right, so if you're looking to be pessimistic, I think there's still some questions there because it's so hard to just flip all that around in just one recruiting class. I will say they did show some progress. Obviously, the last three quarters, they did some real good things against UNR, and then San Diego State didn't have the best offense, but I don't think we should discount. They did win two of the last three games, and
probably should have been three of the last three.
Three in a row, so still some big worries on defense, but a little bit of improvements, and we'll see if, you know, maybe you can get that dream recruiting class. That just seems like a really big ask to have all these guys come in that can do it right away. But I don't disagree with Tony Sanchez. I think that's got to be what you have to do. Just hope you hit on one or two of them. Give yourself the most chances.
Yeah, and I totally echo that comment. I mean, I think that Tony's done a great job of winning the offseason in his initial four off seasons, and there's no reason to think he won't win it in his fifth off season. But just back to my earlier point, I guess, I think it all boils down to, could you beat some teams you're not supposed to next year? For whatever it's worth.
Yeah, I think, and Mike had said, just beat the teams you're supposed to. I think,
well,
even if you
point,
do that,
yeah.
I still think you're 6-6 probably if you beat the teams you're supposed to. So if you combine the two and maybe knock off one team as an upset and beat the teams you're supposed to, all of a sudden you've got one of the best years in UNLV football history.
Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that will be something to watch. Before we get out of here, I know Mike has to run to go down to the UNLV campus talked to some basketball players who are on quite a run of four straight wins. We mentioned it last week on the podcast, but now I hear it's something people are mentioning over and over, that Loyola Marymount loss doesn't look as bad in hindsight. They're kind of rolling. But this is a big week for UNLV. They've got Valpo on Wednesday, followed by Cincinnati on Saturday. Two tough games. Does UNLV keep it rolling this week?
That Valpo game is, you can't look past it. I know the players are probably looking towards that Cincinnati game, and you want to play that game. And I know the fans probably want to, because you get the Mick Cronin storyline and everything. But if the players take care of business and win that Valpo game, there's a chance you could see the Thomas and Mac come to life in that Cincinnati game. And I want to see that. Like, I want to see if this city will start responding to a team that wins five in a row, is 5-1, is playing a top 25, you know, NCAA tournament caliber team. Will people respond to that on a Saturday afternoon and come out and give the crowd some energy and put some life into that building? So I really, you know, I can't root for UNLV, but I'm very interested to see if UNLV beats Valparaiso. They're 5-1. They've won five in a row, and they're hosting Cincinnati with a coach that spurned UNLV in a very public manner. Will fans come out to that game and, you know, be enthusiastic? So it's going to be a very exciting week for UNLV basketball, and they're playing well.
Yeah, the Valparaiso might be a little bit tougher than it looks on paper. They're 3-3, but they've lost close games to West Virginia, Wake Forest. I think, like you said, like you kind of hinted at, it's no gimme, and it feels like a really big one, because I do feel like that it's on the come up. People are getting a little more excited about this program. And Cincinnati, if you can get people in the building that night and then beat them, all of a sudden I feel like you're definitely at the height of the Marvin Minzie's tenure, without a doubt.
Yeah, I think that also when you're looking at places on that schedule, Mike, in case where UNLV has an opportunity to grab a sexy win, this is one of the few chances in your building against a team that's better than you and a team that really doesn't score that much. I think if you hit a few shots, you got a chance to maybe get a dub, which would be significant in where this thing is going. That's a great point. Tell me that's a great point.
That is a good point. Cincinnati.
That's all I wanted to hear you.
Cincinnati's a team that will historically, under Mick Cronin, let you hang around. I mean, they're not going to, you know, beat you 95-60. They're going to try and beat you 65-60. So yeah, they'll let you hang around. So it's a chance for UNLV to steal a win, much like Arizona came in and UNLV had a chance to steal that game last year at a similar point in the season where they had, you know, a good amount of momentum and the crowd came out for that game and you know, the team wasn't quite able to capitalize it even though they played well. If they beat Valparaiso, will the crowd respond in a similar way for this game? And can UNLV win that game? And that would be a big step forward for, you know, Marvin Menzies, you know, because Menzies last year proved that if you give him, a decent team, they'll blow out the teams that are bad. If you give them a team that's, you know, 250-plus on KenPom rating, Menzies will blow that team out, and he can win 20 games per season that way. And that's sort of been the rap on Menzies for his entire coaching career. You know, he'll beat the teams that are at the bottom of the conference, and he'll, you know, feast there. And that's how sort of he has his success, and he has his good win-loss record. But can he beat those teams that are in the top 50? Can he get those, you know, elite premier wins that go on your NCAA tournament resume at the end of the year? So can he take UNLV to that next step where they're capable of doing that? Cincinnati's the first chance they've had to do it this season. So, yeah, that's going to be a big point.
Yeah, good shout with the Arizona game. Actually, a year to the day, first Saturday of December this year at Cincinnati. The one thing about Brewers, I forgot the words you used, terrific point or whatever, that I'm a little
terrific,
bit worried about.
I like that.
Is that what you said?
It
terrific
wasn't,
point.
But that's
okay, well,
slightly better
the
than
the one
what
thing
I
that still gives me pause and worries me a little bit is you said in that the way they're going to beat Cincinnati is hit some shots, and I know they've been better offensively, but we talk about it every week. Hitting some shots is just not this team's strong point. And Cincinnati, out of every program in the country over the last half decade, has been best at not giving up, you know, open looks to begin with. So on paper, just the team's reputations and kind of their strength and weaknesses, that concerns me a little bit.
And they had one great shooting game against, who was it? It was before the Pacific, where they shot the lights out, and they destroyed them, and they looked like an amazing team. The question is, how many times are they going to do that this season? You know, maybe three, four more times this year where they're going to shoot, you know, 40-plus percent on three, 50-plus percent from the floor. That's just not the way this team plays. They can do it, but it's just I expect the ink more like the other, you know, four games that they played, you know, sort of 20 to 30% from three, good inside the arc, try to win with offensive rebounding. That's what I think this team is for now until you can add more talented, you know, offensive players. But that's a team Menzies can win with if they execute and if everything comes together. And that's why as the schedule gets more difficult, it'll be interesting to see how they stack up and are they at that point in the season where they are, you know, playing well as a unit and they can sort of grind out. It's one thing to grind out a win against Oakland and grind them down. Can you grind down Cincinnati? Can you grind out, you know, Illinois on the road? That's an entirely different level of winning basketball. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, that Pacific game, Clyburn, Robotham, and Houston all with three threes. Certainly not something you can count on a nightly basis, but I think that was a really good sign because Pacific was not a bad opponent at all, as we talked about last week on the podcast. I think your original point just stuck with me the most. I mean, this Valparaiso game, it just seems like so big. To make sure you get into that Cincinnati game unscathed. I do think there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on the Cincinnati game if you're going in winning five in a row. So we'll have to see what they do tomorrow night against Valparaiso. Brewer, you were probably the most negative of anyone after the first loss. Not to call you out, I just know that's how dearly you hold your Rebels. How are you feeling now? And we'll give you the final word on the state of the UNLV basketball program.
After the LMU loss, you guys know I was using exaggerational terms and about my feelings towards this team. But to their credit, they have won four in a row or five in a row or whatever it is, and they're not as awful as I thought they were. I would love for them to just have a great effort against Cincinnati, win the game, create some enthusiasm, and survive in advance.
It's just it to me looking at this, it just stands out as such a look past kind of game. It's like Valparaiso is just not a sexy opponent this, and then after that it just goes right into Cincinnati at Illinois, BYU with the T-Mobile. Like, it's just so easy to look past this game, but it's if they do that, they're going to get beat. So it's
I see what you're saying and I don't disagree with you, but I don't think this team's good enough to look past you and I and Case and, you know what I'm saying, and Victor.
Well, we'll find out. I mean, this is I agree with Mike. It looks like that on the surface. This is also probably the toughest opponent they've played since their first game against Loyola. So it's very dangerous. I think just for, you know, you gotta hope they're not falling into that, I guess. And that's all you can do, and we're going to find out. It's Tuesday, we're recording. They play Wednesday night.
If by some chance, you know, if UNLV does, you know, have a really good week and they beat Valpo, and then they go out and beat Cincinnati on Saturday, are we coming in here in the Rebel Room next week, and are you talking NCAA tournament? What does that do for your expectation?
And telling them that, yeah, we're going to have to send Grimala to the tournament. That's exactly what I'm doing.
So this is a huge week for the team's expectations then. I mean, if they go 2-0 this week, I feel like there are a lot of Ray Brewers out there in the UNLV fan base where if they get to, you know, 7-1 and they beat Cincinnati and they beat Illinois, people are going to start, right? Aren't they going to start that push? Like, how good is this team really? And are we going to the tournament?
They'll start that push, but can we be realistic here? Even if they win these two games, they're still an underdog to get into the tournament.
Yes, with their schedule, they always will be.
Okay.
They could be 28-1 heading into the Mountain West tournament, and they'd be an underdog to get in the tournament.
With their schedule, it's going to be very hard to get in without winning the Mountain West. So, yeah, they're still going to be an underdog, and this will be a very uphill climb. But I think it's that
Reno's
kind of fan base.
Going to be ranked number one in the nation because they're playing nobody, so the four teams ahead of them are just going to continue
to
lose.
The NCAA put out their new RPI rating, which is called the NET rating now, and UNLV was like 47 or somewhere. They were like in the top. I don't know what they were, but they were high, and Loyola was number 10. Yeah. So there you go.
I did see that. Very interesting. It's good to have some excitement, some good things to talk about here on the Rebel Room. We'll look forward to seeing what happens this weekend against Cincinnati and tomorrow against Valparaiso. We'll be back at some point next week to talk about UNLV basketball. The cannon is staying red. For Ray and Mike, I'm Case. Thanks for listening to the Rebel Room.